Gregory versus Gregory. Good morning, Mr. Tobias.
Morning.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
You're by yourself, so you have no one to argue with but us.
Which makes me a little more nervous because then, you know, I definitely have had that situation before and not been successful, so. May it please the court, Your Honor, we are before the court today on several assignments of error, but I think the most critical ones and most extensive ones center around the issue of spousal support made by the court in this case. The first assignment of error, Your Honor, is that the award of spousal support
Let me, if I can, try to help get myself focused a little bit. It seems when this case was heard that Judge Potter, at a minimum, had some difficulty with the credibility of Ms. Gregory. He made some pretty clear statements on that. But we have cases out there that say that a trial judge can essentially punt on the issue. In other words, if the issue is raised, the trial judge has to make a determination based upon the evidence presented. And what Judge Potter did in this case, contrary to what other judges have done, is said, well, I'm having a problem sorting this out, but I am going to make determinations, and my determinations are as follow. Why isn't that enough to satisfy the standard of review?
Your Honor, in this particular case, counsel argued in his brief that those statements that you're referring to were dicta. I would submit to the court that that's inaccurate. These were the findings of the court. The court made specific findings about the evidence that she presented with regard to her income and found that it lacked credibility, that her employment situation lacked transparency. I would say he went pretty far in expressing his disbelief of the evidence that she presented, going so far as to say that certain documents were fabricated and self-serving. I would submit to the court that—
And shady. I like that.
Shady
was
one of the words that was used, yes. And I would submit to the court that this strong language puts the trial court in a position where I think what Judge Potter did was he then said, but this is all I have. You haven't done anything to show me what the actual number is, and therefore I'm going to award spousal support. And I think in that statement, in that moment, what the court did was shift the burden to my client to prove what her actual income is. It's clear through the record in this case, Your Honor, that my client did everything he could to find out what her actual income is, despite the fact that that's not his burden. And it's the shifting of that burden, I think, that was the abuse of discretion.
But couldn't Judge Potter's statement actually be read to state, it is her burden of proof, I have nothing to offset that, so therefore I find?
Well, but I think the burden of proof, in the Gibson case, for example, it says there has to be substantial, credible evidence to support an award of spousal support. It's not a minimum burden. It's not if I come in and present some evidence, credible or not credible, I've met my burden. There has to be substantial, credible evidence
well,
to support.
Do you agree that if the court had not made the statements it made, and that there was credible evidence, if believed, in the record to support the trial court's finding?
There was evidence. I agree that the 1,576 number was the number that the wife testified to, and there was evidence.
So that being the case, the trial court speaks through its order. When it entered an order awarding that, our job is to review it to determine whether there is substantial evidence, credible evidence in the record to support it. There is. The musings of the trial court become irrelevant to our standard of review.
Under normal circumstances, I would agree. But in this particular case, I believe that all of the findings of fact that the trial court set forth suggested that this evidence
except they weren't credible. They weren't actually findings of fact in the sense they weren't incorporated into the final order. They were reflections upon the testimony of a witness, and you know, he had every right to change his mind.
Well, that ruling was in fact incorporated into the final ruling, so it would be my argument that it is part of the court's order, and that the court's ruling is conflicting.
So you would say that the standard of review, which incorporates this idea that it needs to be substantial credible evidence in the record, joined by the judge's specific statements that the witness lacked credibility, that testimony was not transparent, shady, and all that, meets the standard of offsetting the burden of proof that the wife was required to make, required to meet.
If I understand the court's point, I think we are saying the same thing, which is that her burden of proof, it has to be substantial credible evidence. If it is not credible, which the court made those findings, then it's not substantial credible evidence, and she has not therefore met her burden.
But if we, assuming we adopt that standard, take the view that you're articulating here today, where does that leave us?
What do we do?
Suppose we say, Mr. Baez, you're absolutely right. Judge Potter made a credibility determination that that offsets the standard review requiring substantial credible evidence. So therefore, the findings of the trial court are reviewed now by us at an abuse of discretion standard. We find the trial court did abuse of discretion. Were you remanded to the trial court? What is the trial court supposed to do? Because this evidence isn't going to exactly spring forth.
Well, that will lead into my second assignment of error. But I think that conceivably the trial court would say, well, yes, I did have questions about the credibility, but I found that this was credible enough. And I appreciate the fact that that's what the court could say on remand, and that to justify its award. But I think what the court should view in conjunction with that is my second assignment of error, the third assignment of error, which is that there was additional evidence of additional income that the wife received that the court did not call income or consider income, actually did not make a ruling one way or the other as to what it is, but I think it's clear that it was income. So I would be asking
talking about
the court,
this $100,000 that you
correct,
got from her.
Correct. So yes. I would be asking the court to remand the case and to consider that her income.
Tell the trial court to consider that her income, or tell the trial court to denominate what that is? In other words, identify what that is. Because if it says it's one thing, we got one result. If it says it's another thing, we have another result. So wouldn't a better remand be to denominate what this particular item is?
I'll take either, Your Honor. However, I think there's enough evidence in the record for the court to delineate what it is. I think the case law is clear that if the trial court has said these documents are fabricated, I don't accept them. These were his words regarding these promissory notes. I don't accept them. So therefore these are not loans to the wife, then they are clearly income to her. Whether they're a gift, whatever we want to call them, they're clearly income to Mrs. Gregory. Regardless of whether they're irregular in nature, how often they occur, they're clearly income to her. Certainly I understand if the court would need additional factual determinations or findings by the trial court to delineate what it is, but I think there's enough evidence in the record as it is.
Was it ever determined, or did it ever become clear at the trial level exactly what Ms. Gregory did?
No, and that's part of the problem. She couldn't answer questions. She couldn't even name who her supervisor was. The general nature of the business seems to be exports and imports. So arranging shipments in and out of Russia of, I have no idea what. That question has never been answered. It wasn't answered in deposition. It wasn't answered in trial. She's unclear. She just arranges the shipments. So now you see the general error that was at the trial level of that it's shady for Hunter, that there's a lot of uncertainty. And I think that's what characterized the court's findings in that regard. But no, it's unclear.
Well, you are, I guess, suggesting that somehow in an opinion we should tell the trial judge that you are bound by your factual findings, if that's what they were, and adjust the award accordingly?
I do, Your Honor, because these are factual findings that the court made, and I think that the trial court felt compelled to award an amount of spousal support because it didn't have anything else.
Now, the case law tells the trial court you have to do something.
Exactly, and that's exactly what I believe happened in this case.
But aren't there plenty of cases out there that say that a trial judge can find a witness incredible in one aspect, incredible in another aspect, and if we're going to defer to the trial court's credibility determination?
Absolutely. And there were other issues in this case where the court did find her credible with regard to testimony regarding custody and the children. on these two particular issues, he did find her not to be credible. With regard to her income, he says there's no W-2s, there's no 1099s, there's no pay stubs, there's no records whatsoever. He discussed very specific, and then obviously discussed that her employment, there's a lack of transparency. It's unclear what her relationship is with this corporation. So I think he did opine on the credibility of her employment. He also opined on the credibility of those promissory notes. So yes, I do believe that a court can find a witness credible on one matter, but I think on these two matters, the court clearly found that the evidence that she submitted was not credible.
Could the trial court award spousal support without making any factual findings on wife's income?
If there's credible evidence, yes.
Credible evidence of what?
Credible evidence of her needs and her resources. And what?
Well, the needs and resource, and the needs aren't an issue here, are they?
She did present an income and expense sheet. The court did not make any factual findings with regard to that. There was evidence presented by her of what she alleged her needs were. So that the court did not address that, and I certainly am not suggesting that there wasn't some evidence of her needs. And the court did not opine as to whether it was credible. I assume the court found it credible because it didn't comment one way or the other. But there has to, I agree that the court doesn't have to delineate every reason and say, I found this credible, this uncredible, this is why I'm doing this with great specificity. But there has to be some evidence in the record that makes it clear or supports that finding.
That's inverted a little bit. Suppose the trial judge had not said these things about lacking transparency, shady, self-serving, fabricated, lacking credibility, and just simply said, I find, and chose the same number that he chose for making his determination. Would you have any basis to challenge?
I think I would have a very difficult time, Robert. Because I do think the fact that he made these findings, he put them on the record, he included them as part of his order, he created a contradiction within that. I would still argue that the evidence didn't support the finding. But ultimately, I appreciate the fact that the trial judge is...
The standard of review would block you pretty much at that point.
Yes, and then the trial judge is to determine the credibility of the witnesses. And if he doesn't opine about the credibility of the witnesses, then we assume whatever evidence he used, he found credible. But in this particular case, he did opine about the credibility of the witness. I think that the trial court felt that his hands were tied and had to do something, and so it made an award in contradiction to those findings of fact and those credibility determinations.
Let me just very quickly touch upon assignments there, 4, 5, and 6.
Yes.
That's the marital debt or the equitable distribution award and the two attorney's fees assignment. Those are both abuse of discretion standards of review, aren't they?
They are.
And that's a pretty high hurdle to get over. I mean, it's got to be no judge in their right mind would have done that kind of review.
It is, and just briefly with regard to the attorney's fees award, I think the concern in this case is that making an attorney's fees award, we have to kind of look at the totality of the case. What's the tenor of this case? And in this particular case, it's clear that there was a lack of transparency, that my client had to go above and beyond, including hiring a private investigator, to try to find the nature of the true nature of her employment. And so I think in this case, we can say that. We can say that this was a situation where she was hiding information to the end, and that the court recognized that in its findings of fact. And so to make an award of attorney's fees to her on the sole basis, it appears to be a disparity in income, I think is an abuse of discretion. Briefly with regard to the equitable distribution award, again, I'll mirror what counsel said in the previous case. This is something we would love a lot of guidance on, because I do think that while the court does not have to delineate very specifically every reason that it made every part of the equitable distribution award, there has to be some evidence on the record that shows why a court would award all of the debt to one party and divide the only marital asset equally between the parties.
You would also suggest that if we were to make a determination consistent with your position on issues 2 and 3, that it would require a remand of the entire case to make a total equitable distribution determination.
Yes, because of the order in which the court has to make the determinations, yes.
Anything else?
No, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Come down to recounsel.